Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to today's episode of On Point with me, Don Allen, and my co-host in Studio A, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing this morning?
Real good. Okay. This afternoon, Don. Yes. Real good. How's it going?
It's going great. Mr. Edwards, I'd just like to say that for our listeners, we're getting into Black History Month, and I just want to let listeners know that someone came up to me the other day. I happen to be really close to where you air your television show, Black Focus, downtown at Minneapolis Television Networks, and an older gentleman, older white gentleman, came up to me and says, you know, I heard you guys' show, and I did not know that Mr. Edwards was the longest-seated chair of the Minneapolis Urban League. I didn't know he served with the NAACP, and he just started rallying up stuff, different items, Mr. Edwards. So I was very glad to hear that. You know,
well, see, all he has to do is go to my website or read either one of my last two books. Yes. That'll help him out.
and I did tell him, I said, you know, go to theminneapolisstory.com and check that out.
Yep. Yeah, I was chairman of the board for 11 years, member of the board for 17. Yep, served a long time. What do we got, Don? What are we looking at here? Nice day in the Twin Cities. What I understand we've got some controversy down in the state of Texas on the Jayhawk.
Yeah, actually, the Kansas House Speaker, Mike O'Neill, is under fire after asking Republican House members to pray for President Obama's death. This was in an email sent out to GOP colleagues in the House. O'Neill asked his following Republicans to pray the Psalms 109, which contains the following lines: "Let his days be few, and let others take his office. Let his children be fatherless, and his wife a widow." So this is getting a lot of play, Mr. Edwards, and it's being picked up by the Examiner, Huffington Post, CNN, MSNBC. So we just pulled it off the wire. So expect to see this at least in the next hour on your television news channels.
So this comes about a little over a week after the editor of the Jewish World in Atlanta, Georgia, called upon Israel to assassinate or be a part of an assassination of President Barack Obama, which allegedly the Secret Service is now examining the possibility of an investigation. I noticed I didn't say an investigation, but examining the possibility. So the Speaker of the Kansas House of Representatives, wow, has the Republican National Committee asked for his resignation as Speaker of the House? In fact, I would ask for his resignation as a member of the legislature based on a statement like that.
They have not asked. They're, like I said, Mr. Edwards, this is the first wire that we just got off the AP here, and I guess it will snowball uphill, as is the gentleman with the Jewish news based in Atlanta, Georgia. So we will see what happens.
Yes, this is very dangerous in light of some of the more extreme right-wing, I call them Billy Bob, links and postings that Billy Bob's pretty angry, pretty upset, and feels that he's on almost an angelic mission, if you will, which probably very well could include the assassination or attempted assassination of President Barack Obama. That makes for very dangerous times. We'll have to follow that, Mr. Allen, and see what happens down there in Kansas.
Yeah, and I want to let our listeners know you're listening to On Point, broadcasting live in the Max Frost Studios downtown Minneapolis, and we have a couple of guests waiting on the line, but there's a couple items, Mr. Edwards, that I'd like to hit before we go right into these interviews with our guests. First of all, as reported on Minnesota Public Radio, the Council on Black Minnesotans, I guess, was up or scheduled to be sunset here this year, but the Sunset Advisory Commission suggested that the Council of Black Minnesotans be continued for 2 years and then added to the 2014 Sunset Review Schedule, Mr. Edwards, which I find highly suspect because 2014 is when we elect the governor again, or a governor.
Right.
And so this could be the thing that sells the black community that our Governor Dayton here has saved the black council of the Council on Black Minnesotans here in 2014. Some of us see this coming. Some of us have no idea. But I find that very interesting.
And my assumption is that given depending upon what the political climate will be in 2014, that they may just do the same thing, extend them for another 2 years, or if the chemistry is right in America coming off the election of 2012, being midterm for a Republican presidential individual, a Republican president, in fact, the temperament of the country may be altogether different. They may talk in terms of just eliminating them, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, there's some, you know, great planning, if that's what you want to call it, going on within the conservative extreme right in America. Okay.
Yes. And last week, we touched a little bit on some of the casualties of the Minneapolis Northside, Minneapolis tornado that hit over there on the 22nd of May last year, 2011. And we understand that Karen Alawula will no longer be with the Minneapolis Foundation, and that was covered in a story about bringing the bullies to the playground, how the Minneapolis Foundation came in, gave out a lot of money, and didn't bother to, you know, really monitor everything. Matter of fact, Mr. Edwards, I think you have been to the majority of the meetings. I was asked not to come anymore, and still we do not have a report on exactly where the dollars are at all.
Well, we want to be absolutely transparent on that. I was in attendance at every meeting except the very last one. Of course, the Northside Tornado Relief Committee hasn't met in 2 months. I was not at the October meeting, which was delayed. But initially, the advanced publications indicated there would be a report issued on the 15th of September of last year, identifying expenditures, if you will, gifts or whatever else. It didn't happen. Allegedly, on the 29th of September, some kind of report allegedly emerged. Then in the second week of October, there was an indication that a more definitive report would be forthcoming. Never did happen. Right after that, the committee really stopped meeting, though they it appeared that they were going to have some kind of meeting in the second or third week in November. Really didn't happen. No meeting in December, and, of course, there's been no meeting in January. And, you know, there are a lot of investigations going on. You know, bank accounts, apparently Franklin National Bank is under some examination scrutiny as an outgrowth of an account that was opened there. The casualties over at the Minneapolis Council of Churches, Bruce Bork forced out on December 31st, you know. I understand now Sanctuary is now the fiscal agent for, which is kind of interesting. That raises the question of a conflict of interest because the Reverend Coleman is minister at Sanctuary, Covenant Sanctuary. Raises the question about being a member of the core committee, as it is called, i.e. the exec committee, and at the same time being the fiscal agent handling the fiscal information, which still has not been put together and disseminated as promised way back in August. But, hey, that's, you know, that's beyond my pay grade.
Yeah. And speaking of someone who likes to say that, I have an email here from the president CEO of the Minneapolis Urban League. On Monday, January 23rd, it had come to light that the Minneapolis Urban League actually had housing available after the tornado. So I sent Mr. Gray this email. It reads, "It has come to my attention from several callers that the Minneapolis Urban League had an empty residence directly after tornado located in North Minneapolis. My question would be is how come it wasn't used for temporary housing or a shelter during tornado recovery? Please explain in detail. Thanks in advance for your cooperation."
On Tuesday, and, of course, he hasn't responded.
Well, actually, Mr. Edwards, I went up there and I pulled the email off directly from Mary, president of the minister. And
you're breaking up a little bit, Don, just a tad. Okay.
Mr. Ray says, "I assume referring to the group home facility. Immediately following the tornado, our facility manager has discussed with the city of Minneapolis emergency preparedness to offer 5 rooms for small families and to offer our administrative office conference rooms as temporary sites to provide assistance to renters and homeowners. The city of Minneapolis appreciated our request, but decided that Barview, North Commons, and the Salvation Army had facilities that were more accommodating. So, excuse me, that was Ms. Gray's response. I haven't responded to him yet because I don't understand how a six-bedroom house could not be accommodating for six families. So I've got a big question mark in my head there, Mr. Irvin.
Well, I imagine the Urban League at some point in time in history will be able to respond to that. It would be interesting if they would make public the communication between they and the city of Minneapolis as it pertains to the offer. It'd be nice to see that. And then if that does exist, then you could probably ask the city. It'd be appropriate to ask CPAC why that offer was declined at a time when, and sitting in the meetings, I heard, you know, many discussions about the need for facilities to accommodate those who had been displaced by the tornado. You know, it'd be good if that if the Urban League would agree to publish that exchange of communications with the city of Minneapolis.
Yeah, I think that would be great. You know, Mr. Edwards, we have a lot of events starting to kick off next week for Black History Month.
Mm-hmm.
29 days, because it is leap year, if I'm not mistaken, coming up here for the month of February. And I think one of the most important events to happen in downtown Minneapolis, or at least in my view in the Twin Cities, is what's going on at the Minneapolis Community and Technical College with the Student African American Brotherhood and Brother to Brother. Today I'd like to welcome Dr. Jesse Mason and Mr. Robert Reese, who both are senior advisors with the Student African American Brotherhood, affectionately known as SAB, and Brother to Brother. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yes, welcome. Appreciate you coming aboard. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. Why don't you just direct the questions and et cetera, and let's get the feedback, make the public aware of this outstanding series of activities and events.
Well, I'd like to start with Dr. Mason. Can you tell us a little bit about the origin and the history of SAB at MCTC and kind of lead into some of the things that are going on next week? And then we'll have Mr. Reese also to chime in. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you. The Student African American Brotherhood is actually a product of the president's Student Success Task Force, or Graduation Task Force, that started out as one of the subcommittees of the task force was looking at African American males' retention and graduation rate, that was headed by Jonathan Lofgren. And through that work, we suggested the Student African American Brotherhood, that was then led by Dr. Lofgren, Yvette Trotman, and Robert Reese. And from that, we spent the last, since 2010, I think, preparing for the unfolding of the Student African American Brotherhood, which we officially started enrolling students and doing programming this last fall, with me being directed as a particular coordinator. And what this next week is actually our kickoff week to, on a bigger scale, introduce ourselves to the community and the students at MCTC.
Great. Mr. Reese, how has this has this been an exciting group of events for you with SAB and Brother to Brother?
Well, you know, it's exciting in a number of ways. First, I like to say that it's been exciting because the institution has shown a commitment to increasing the graduation and retention rate of African American men and men of color. I think it's important that the community know that the focus began. And we've been sort of really myopic in our work to deal with the retention of African American men. But we have always known and we've always planned to expand this work and focus on retention of men of color. We know that men are lagging behind females in every ethnic category when it comes to retention, coming to school and staying enrolled in school, and ultimately graduating. But for African American men, it, that rate, they were at the bottom of the totem pole. So we felt like we needed to focus on this group first. So it's been exciting that the institution has made this commitment. They've committed it with financial resources, also with the time of some of the talented, most talented faculty and staff, like Dr. Mason, and really has said, you know, we're going to do everything we can to really put a laser focus on this issue of African-American and men of color retention. It's also been exciting because we've seen the students get excited about it. It's always exciting, particularly at a college, when you see students beginning to understand that they have that they are empowered. And so seeing the students to seeing the students recognize that they have the ability to look at and direct some of the issues, some of the programs that we have, some of the ideas, and some of the best practices around the country about African-American retention, that's been exciting as well. And then finally, you know, moving to this week-long of activities, week-long event of activities, that's exciting because it's a wonderful opportunity for the public to also get involved and become aware of what we're doing at Minneapolis Community Technical College.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Mason, some of the events that you have going on next week, we're going to go ahead and put a link up on our show page so people, I think we have already, so people can register or find out information what's going on. But if you could, like, walk us through the dates and the times of the events that are happening next week, our listeners locally here, I guess, would be glad to have that.
Okay, wonderful. First of all, our theme is United in Legacy and Moving Forward in Excellence. The wonderful thing about the events that we have is students particularly came up with this with these list of events and these days of events with the help of the SOB advisory. So on Monday, we're having a SOB spoken word with the theme Black Men, Past, Present, and Future, featuring E.G. Bailey and Louis Alamalie from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in our T Skyway. Also, on Tuesday, we have the SOB Open House, and this is where we'll talk about and look at the work and the history of SOB since January 2010. And then Wednesday, we have the documentary on African-American males, education struggles, and success, and that's from 5:30 to 7:30. And Thursday, we have the SOB B2B Faculty and Staff Appreciation. And finally, Friday, February 3rd, we have Black Men in America to the Teach-In that will be featuring Alex Pate, Lissa Jones, Senator John Harrington, and Sarah Walker. And finally, Saturday, we'll have the SOB Formal Celebration Dinner with our national CEO and head of the Student African-American Brotherhood, Dr. Tyrone Bledsoe.
Oh, wow, that's going to be a busy week next week, it looks like. And do if people that are interested in attending the formal affair or any of the events, is there a website or something they can go to register, sign up, or find out more information?
Yes, if they go to the MCTC homepage and look at the Student African American Brother Kickoff Week, at the end of the page there is a page where there is a line that you can go and reserve RSVP for the SOB formal celebration, which is Saturday, February 4th. But all the other events you do not have the RSVP for, and they are open to the public.
Yeah, and
Don, let me also mention that, and so that it is clear to everybody that all of the events are, like Dr. Mason said, open to the public and free. All of the events are free. So if someone is interested in attending, even the celebration on Saturday, then all they need to do is RSVP so that we can get a count of those individuals, and then we can make sure that we have enough. Meals and refreshments for everybody who's going to attend.
Okay. Mr. Edwards, do you have any questions for the gentleman?
Just a couple, Don. Just outstanding presentation at this point by both of the academicians, if you will. Dr. Mason, what is the percentage of students of color at MTCC?
Approximately, as of fall of 2011, we're about 53% population student of color.
Oh, makes it probably one of the most integrated institutions of higher learning in the state of Minnesota, in the history of the state of Minnesota. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
The president, that's Dr. Davis?
Yes, Phil Davis.
I'm talking about the president of the institution. That's Dr.
Yes.
Davis? Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Phil Davis.
Dr. Davis, if I'm not mistaken, same Dr. Davis that was a member of the Pulse Board, Police Officers Training, Standard and Training Board a number of years ago, if I'm not mistaken. Could you give us just a little bit more background about the national? I noticed you indicated that one of your speakers will be the national president of SOB. And how many affiliations and locations is the organization in at this hour?
Well, nationally, SOB has over 200 chapters across the country, and they've been working on expanding it to the Caribbean, and even there's been talks about expanding it to Europe. Dr. Bledsoe actually started SOB about 21 years ago in Georgia, and dealing with the same problems of retention and graduation rates among African-American males.
And what would be the method of funding for the national organization? And then is that similar funding pattern in place for the local chapters or affiliates or however they're specifically identified?
Well, it's different from chapter to chapter. Some are student groups. Like ours is an initiative. So we are funded by grants, and we are funded by funds from the school to implement the programming that will lead to retention, graduation rates, help students with their coursework, and also develop a space of inclusiveness for our specifically our African-American male students and our males of color.
Now, on that particular point, I'm aware of a seminar, or actually a symposium just last week, a lot of discussion about the African-American women stepping up more, being in play. In fact, I was on the front page of the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. Now, the organization is not restricted by gender, is it? Or if so, how do you deal with the issue of the participation of females of color?
What a great question. Actually, we do have females in the Student African-American Brotherhood right now.
And we've just been in talks
about actually creating what we call a SAS program, the Student African-American Sisterhood, for sisters and females of color, and that will work or be coordinated with our SAS program as well.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Mason. Appreciate it.
You know, one of the things
I want you to complete it up.
Okay, there's a go ahead, Mr. Reese.
Mr. Reese, go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was one thing that I wanted to add to that because you know we really sort of wrestled with this idea about females being involved with the program from the very beginning. We did not want it to be exclusionary. We didn't want to have, the perception that we were excluding any particular gender. But we really came through and came across with an understanding that anybody who wanted to support the retention and graduation of men of color were welcome to be a part of it. So it's not just for African Americans. It's not just for there are students in there who are of African descent. There are students in there who are from the majority community. There are students in there who are female. So there are a number of people who are participating, but there's one single focus, and that focus is to create an environment and programming that would generate a greater retention and graduation for men of color. And so just kind of wanted the community to understand exactly what's going on here.
Hey, go ahead, Mr. Allen. Why don't you finish it up?
Yeah, well, we'd like to thank you, Dr. Mason and Mr. Reese, for joining us today, and we hope this is not the last time. Maybe you can come back a couple of weeks and tell us how everything went and what a great time it was and some of the significant gains that you made for this kickoff. And I'd like to let people know Minneapolis Community and Technical College is located at 1501 Hennepin Avenue, downtown, right across the street from the Basilica, plenty of parking. Again, if you want to find out more information about this, go to www.minneapolis.edu. And on the left-hand side of the screen, you can click, and it will give you a list of events. And this, so we'd like to thank Dr. Mason and Mr. Reese for joining us today. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks a lot.
Have a good day.
And from this corner, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. All right, Mr. Allen, interesting. I certainly hope community supports the efforts of these men and women, if you will. And certainly kudos to the institution. I mean, I didn't want to put them on the spot while they were on the air with us, but, you know, given the political temperature sometimes, and I'm well familiar with some of the battles that had to be fought by the legendary Nellie Stone Johnson when she began to make it well known in her role on the state board about the importance of the inclusion of the African-American, the sons and daughters of the African. You know, people were having some problems with that 15, 20 years ago. And I just hope that folks remember, as it pertains to higher education, the role that Nellie Stone Johnson, Cecil Neumann, Father Denzel Carty, and others played in encouraging Minnesota's institutions of higher learning and recognizing the existence of the African-American as a viable asset to higher education. Because I can tell you, going back 30, 35, 40 years, I'm 73 years old, you know, been in this battle since 1959. I watched some great warriors, some great heroes, if you will, make sure that some of these doors were open. And so 53% presence, if you will, that's outstanding. I just hope that those statistics, those percentages can be held. But I just hope that folk don't forget, if you will, ignore or dismiss how it was they got there. Okay?
Exactly. And I just wanted to bring it to note, I'm actually on Wednesday night down there at MCTC, Mr. Edwards. Mm-hmm. I'm introducing the documentary titled Education's Struggle and Success, Educating Black Males in Public Spaces. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a time when it was against the law to teach black men how to read and write. And,
yes, yes.
And through my research, you know, I've also found out that, you know, has that time come back? If you look from 2002 to 2012, they said education should be is a civil right. But yet, last 10 years, it seems that especially the black male population in academia is like going nowhere. From the public schools to the halls of the colleges. It's at a total standstill, and hopefully SOP can create this initiative, and they did, but create it, but push it a little bit forward to make stuff happen in a positive way.
Absolutely. And by the way, for our listening audiences, both domestically and internationally, particularly domestically, who maybe have forgotten what you were saying, Mr. Allen, is that the punishment at one time in this country, not too long ago, I mean, it's not like we're talking about biblically, you know, 1,000 years ago, 500 years ago, et cetera, the punishment in this country for Negroes, quote-unquote, male and female, who were found to have been able to read and write and et cetera, was the amputation, if you will, of fingers and hands and feet.
Yes.
As well as floggings, if you will, sometimes being flogged to death. And so, for our younger generation, understand the quest that had to be undertaken, the battles that had to be joined, if you will, and ultimately the success of making the quote-unquote then majority understand the importance of African Americans being able to quote-unquote become extremely literate, if you will. And we tend to forget that, you know, sometimes. White academicians indicate that that's not anything we should talk about. And the reason I bring that up, Mr. Allen, is a debate that's going on in Arizona right now, who, you know, their governor has become quite famous with shaking her finger in Barack Obama's face. But I'm talking about a decision by the Arizona legislature, as well as a decision in Tennessee by the Tennessee legislature, to change any references in the history books in the schools of Tennessee and Arizona that reflect negatively on slavery and those who were slave owners. And so African Americans and others at the highest possible academic level need to take note of that and begin to discuss a strategy. And I repeat this again. These two legislatures have talked in terms that the history books will be altered, if you will, and that that slavery will not be portrayed as a negative event.
Wow. Yeah. You know, Mr. Edwards, that's funny that you say that. I just got done taking African American History 1, and I'm actually in African American History 2 right now, and it was very interesting. Everything that you just said, that, I mean, it's no way that it wasn't a negative event. From the burial ground found in the middle of Manhattan, where there were over 10,000, it was a slave graveyard, to back, you know, the first the slaves off the ships in the Middle Passage, you think, that was a Holocaust. Okay.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And so I find that very interesting. Very interesting. What else do we have here, Mr. Edwards?
Well, we want to get the phone number. There may be some people that someone may want to make inquiry of the presentation by the two gentlemen from MTCC. Or maybe someone has a reflection on what we just unveiled as the new legislation in Arizona and Tennessee. With respect to a different definition of slavery and the obstruction and violence and brutality that was generated against the Negro populations of those particular that particular period.
Yeah, our number here is in on point is 877-572-4288. The phone lines are now open, 877-572-4288. We did have a caller, but they did not stay on hold. So, caller, I invite you to come back, and actually the caller has come back, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, well, let's get them in. Let's trunk them on in, as they say.
Yes, you're live on the air, Mass is calling.
Hi, this is Lisa Marie calling in.
Hi, Miss Lisa Marie.
How are you? I wanted to call to talk about the Saab Brotherhood. And I wanted to mention, you know, I wanted to give them support because it's important for the African-American men to get support on that campus because they did just lose the basketball program. So I was hoping that they could put a little energy into trying to get that basketball program back. But another thing I wanted to mention or ask them is how involved was the faculty and the educators, because there is a relationship that needs to be bonded, you know, in the classroom, not only with the club, but, you know, in the classroom and the whole atmosphere. So I was hoping that they could really, you know, involve that, get that more involved, because my history at the school, I was the president of one of the student organizations, and we did have to focus on those issues. We fought against those issues, and the African-American men did have some concerns. They really did not have the support that they needed, and even at that time, they didn't have that a program that was really put together. So hopefully I wanted to just, you know, encourage that program and just mention those things so that while they're on that campus, you know, to really, really focus, because it is a community college, and a lot of the men that go there in the surrounding areas are affected by a lot of the disparities.
Well,
so,
you know, let's do this, Don. You're there and are certainly familiar with the academic setting as well as the political setting. Can you kind of respond to Lisa Marie's observation and question?
Well, I have a reputation there, Ms. Lisa Marie, of telling it like it is. I think that the Saab initiative is probably one of the greatest things in addressing black male failures. But then you have a culture of, you know, last week, Wednesday, the U.S. Department of Education, whoever funds student loans, set the checks to be cut. The checks got in the bank Thursday. The campus was a ghost town Friday. And you've seen that before, I'm sure, Lisa Marie. And
I've seen it. I've worked there as well.
Yeah, and so, yeah, and me also. And so with that said, the culture needs to be changed. I mean, you have some really great instructors like Dr. Mason. You have great administrators like Mr. Reese. You have the veterans program where all those people are great. But then you have a divided segment of those who feel that white privilege, they don't understand that they're using white privilege, and it's basically institutionalized racism to...
Well, one thing I did want to say, if I could interrupt, please.
Go right ahead.
I wanted to say that, you know, that back at the time when you had the incident at Jenna 6, there was a lot of attention brought to the colleges and their involvement in the community. And so when we had a struggle, there were a lot of things going on, even a financial aid issue as far as students coming in and getting this money. So there were things put in place to try and avoid that. But that's why I asked if the faculty was involved, because that's an area of the financial aid, and the students need to be educated when they go into that school. There's an orientation process, but to avoid the stereotypes of certain students coming in and getting the money, and then, you know, that's been there for a while, you know, that...
Yeah.
Well, you know, that atmosphere. So they need to educate the students more when they come in on how to get that, you know, financial aid, what it's for, and they have to make a commitment to stay in school. I mean, they may need it, but they have to commit themselves.
But I just have to say that there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and I'll leave it at that. And we appreciate your call.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa Marie. Okay.
Hello, caller. You're live on the air.
This is Terry from the Minneapolis Mayor.
Hey, Terry, how you doing?
Good. Actually, I had a question, but I'd like to say something about people in financial aid and not showing up. And again, this is just my opinion, and then I have a question to ask.
Mm-hmm.
But part of the reasons some of these, obviously if they've made it into a college or community college, they've made it through high school, whether through a high school diploma or GED. So I think part of the issue needs to be dealt with are young people while they're still in middle school and high school. But if they're not being given jobs, and when you go over north, you can see who's working and who's not. It's Latinos doing all the roofing and the work over there, and it's not African Americans. People who don't have jobs will put themselves in a position to be able to collect money somehow, even if it's through a financial loan.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, what's being put in place to give these people maybe a part-time job or some initiative so that they don't abuse that money? Because what people don't realize is they're going to end up having to pay it back, but people are worried about putting food on their table today.
Well, Terry, I agree with you 100%. In the documentary that's going to be played next Wednesday, there is a woman who's graduating, been there almost 2.5 years. She's graduating this spring. She applied. She's a black woman, lives over north, applied for every possible student, work, study, job in the school, and everybody turned their nose up at her. That's a huge problem, okay? That is a very huge problem. And I understand that people
go ahead,
come.
I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. People come down, and the financial aid thing has become, you know, yeah, you have your diploma, you have your GED. You want to go. There's a lot of, believe me, there's a majority of people that do want to go to school, and there's a minority of people that want to go, have figured out the financial aid game. And, yeah, desperate people do desperate things. But then again, we come from a system, like you said, that have not provided opportunity. These young kids, Terry, when you and I were growing up in the Twin Cities, if we wanted to work at McDonald's, Burger King, Taco Bell, Arthur Treacher's Fish and Chips, Embers, Perkins, or any one of these fast food restaurants after school, all we had to do when we turned 16 was go down the street and put in an application. They'd call our house the next day, talk to our parents, and, you know, hey, you start your job, such and such. Now these kids, especially the ones between that 16 to 18 years old, they can't go to the McDonald's like they could traditionally go to. They can't go to the Wendy's, the Taco Bell, because you have adult men and women, Hispanic, Latino, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, in these roles as permanent workers supporting their households. Those jobs, they don't have the high turnover rate anymore. So you're at a dead end. But, yeah, I know desperate people do desperate things, but at some point we have to solve the education failure in the middle schools, and Minneapolis being the worst in the country. We have to solve that, because then opportunities work up. But what's happening right now is the only opportunities are for the educators to maybe distribute $240,000 around the administration and fire 52 teachers, and nothing's going to these these students. I mean, I've been at MCTC since last fall, and the kids who are coming in off the Minneapolis public high school system or the Minneapolis public school systems, I mean, there's a small percentage, especially the children of color, that can barely write a one-page thesis on buttering toast. And it's,
well, let me ask you one question, and then I'm going to give you one scolding. Are you ready?
I'm ready for anything.
All right. The question is, if some of these African-American males are not graduating, how many – what are the statistics, because maybe some of them have been incarcerated, and if they're incarcerated, is this sob group going to extend itself – into the prison system so that these people can continue their education?
Terry, before the scolding, I'd just like to share this with you. There is about a 70% of African-American population down at, and I'm being conservative, at MCTC, which are felons. There are a bunch of them down there that went to Summit Academy OIC for training and hopes for jobs and didn't get a damn thing. That's why they came over to MCTC. Because MCTC was giving away the same courses for free, okay? And a job is not promised to any of them. They, the felons, the ex-offenders, their job path is the hardest when they get education. I just talked to a guy who went through the addiction counseling program to be a counselor, and he graduates in May. He got a letter from the Minnesota Department of Health and said that we're not going to give you a license because you're a felon. You're ex.
But let me ask a question, because I mean, these kinds of discussions have gone on before. Terry, that's some hard questions that you're asking. Don, what is the philosophy and what is the policy that Dr. Davis has under discussion, or does he have any kind of concern about this?
Well, the email that I received from Dr. Davis last week, Mr. Edwards, is an email of concern, but an email, again, to start an equity task force.
Ah.
And, again, you have a system that we've all seen before that, okay, another task force? For what?
Right.
You know, and so, I mean, I don't know why. I mean, SOB is there. They're doing what they can do. But in that particular school, Mr. Edwards, I mean – I like the teachers. I like the professors, especially the ones from St. Catherine and University of Minnesota and other colleges that come in and give you your lesson. And they're very serious about it. But then you have an arrogance of the culture, of the people who run the culture for the school, the paid staff, who blacks are less than. We're not going to consider Black History Month for the school newspaper.
Well, let me make this suggestion, because, Terry, you made a couple points that hit close to my own concern. And as I said, I go way back to the days when individuals like Nellie Stone Johnson on the State Higher Education Board, et cetera, was talking in terms of all these institutions, be it Minneapolis Technical Community College, Minneapolis Community College, et cetera. You know, we should try to, Don, invite Dr. Davis to join us, as Dr. Mason and Mr. Reese did, to join us next week for 10, 15 minutes, and kind of respond to some of the observations made by the last two callers, because our obligation is certainly to respond to callers who take the time to examine the circumstances and conditions. So I'm going to encourage us to do that, to invite Dr. Davis to be on this program. Terry, I don't know if that'll satisfy the questions that you have, and then you obviously have some scolding for us, but I'm certainly committed to do that, because I'm interested in what the chief policymaker, and by extension his chief policy board, what they are thinking, and I know that they are cognizant of some of these things, because I'm aware that these discussions have been going on for over 20 years. Now, Dr. Davis was not there 20 years ago, as I said before, he was over at the Post Board. But that's something, Terry, I'd like to offer as a continuation of this discussion, and how appropriate this kind of discussion during Black History Month. What's the scolding, Terry?
Well, the scolding is, the tornado happened right before Memorial Day weekend. And while I absolutely agree with you, Don, on, in regards to, you know, the Urban League and if Scott Gray and them had a house to, you know, offer to the tornado victims, that should have been done. But you, your SOB group is having a speaker next week who has a weekly talk show up there at KMOJ, and I can tell you that the owners of the Five Points building shut down those grills at 5 p.m. Memorial Weekend and never opened their doors again. They have a big empty shell underneath that they could have opened the doors just as well, too, to help house tornado victims, considering it went right through Broadway and Penn. So
You know, I'm not going to defend it, Terry, but I'm going to let you know that the culture is changing down there, and these are people, the person that you're talking about has a spouse that is a professor, PhD down there, and all I can say, being politically correct at this point, is that the culture is definitely changing.
And what do you mean by that, Don?
well, have you ever
Because I don't see it changing for to helping the common folks out here.
Well, the school is not going to be able to be everything for everyone. The school is there to try to get education, give education to those that want it. Unfortunately, there are those on the outside that have pimped the school, that have pimped the honorarium for years because the people don't know who these people really are in the community. So believe me, Terry, I'm turning on the lights. Sometimes when things are planned, have a part-time employee there and a full-time student, they don't come and ask me, Don, who is this or who is that? I find out like 2 or 3 days after the staff meeting that this is who they have coming in. And I believe me, I sit there and I say, well, why? And they say, well, why are you saying why? And I have 1,000 stories worth of evidence to say why. Okay? So believe me, the culture is changing. That's what I mean.
Okay.
All right.
That was
all right. Okay. By the way, Terry, let me make a referral for you. If you can, I know there are copies at the Spanish Library, and maybe, Don, you may want to do the same thing. You need to read the book of the legendary icon, Nellie Stone Johnson, a book she published a couple years before her death, written actually by Steve Perry, the former editor of City Pages. You may want to read that and take a look at her analysis of this problem 20 years ago.
Well, I will take that advice.
Terry.
All righty.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. Yeah. What else we got, Don? Woo. Any more calls, man? I like that. I like the, you know.
Well, someone had called in, but we were talking to Terry for a while. Hopefully, caller, please call back. Again, you're listening to On Point. Our number is 877-572-4288. If you have any questions, call 877-572-4288.
Here's where I'm a little troubled by with respect to the last caller, more than the first caller, Lisa Marie, who said she also had worked there. As you pointed out yourself, that you've been a part-time employee there. Scott Gray and the Urban League have been saying to the philanthropic and academic community that they're doing a lot of things and that they did a lot of things after the tornado events of May and through June and et cetera. The fact of the matter is there has been no testimony and a testament to any of the declarations that the Urban League has made and almost less than an OIC and et cetera. You know, Don, it's now almost the end of January, and I'm still as an African American, you know, who's been here basically all of his life since 1945. So that kind of makes me a senior citizen in that respect. I'm getting kind of tired of looking at these tarps, and I'm getting tired of seeing these stories being written, talking in terms of all the wonderful things and how happy the colored people are, if you will. And I know, and I can only speak for myself within this context, I know that that's just totally untrue, that the African-American community is suffering and that some of these organizations have contributed immensely in a negative way to this, if you will. And so I just think that folks need to be maybe asking a little tougher questions than what is being asked. I mean, I find it interesting what you said is that many of the current student bodied the, and even alumni, you know, many of them wound up going to MTCC because their dream and the promises made to them never materialized at OIC or the Urban League. You know what I'm saying?
There's a lot of them down there like that, Mr. Edwards. A lot.
Yes, yes, I know they are. I know they are. And I just think that the Dr. Davises and others of the world are going to have to make an appropriate assessment about continuing to give credibility to these kinds of Ponzi schemes. Too many black folk out here not working, too many black folk not eating, too many black folk suffering the trauma. Even before, I think you wrote a couple times, Don, that there was a natural disaster in North Minneapolis long before the tornado.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's what we've heard these last two callers say, and some of us, such as myself, were saying it 50 years ago, okay? And, well, you know, we were always being told by some that it wasn't, they didn't know the word 35, 40 years ago, politically correct, but that's the word now. If you will, it's not politically correct to say that. Well, you know, I don't buy that. I don't accept that. And I will not participate or aid in the bed, if you will. But, you know, I just hope that we extend an invitation to Dr. Davis to join us next Saturday for about 10 or 15 minutes, as Dr. Mason and Mr. Reese did, and kind of talk to us a little bit about some of the statements that have been made, and some of the reflections about what's going on. I agree. How many more task forces do we need? You know, we're the most overstudied and overtrained people, we black Americans in this country, to always be at the bottom of the totem pole economically, educationally, and otherwise. You know what I'm saying? I mean, man, we've been trained to death. You know, we've been studied to death, you know. And I know in my lifetime, and I'm 73 years of age, we sure have been studied like hell, and yet the problems seem to, quote-unquote, increase and grow like a cancer. And now we're under attack by the extreme right wing in this country who, through people like Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum and others, maintain that we're lazy and trifling and don't want to work. Hell, you know, as a part of black history, there was a time in this country when we, as black people, as the sons and daughters of the African, worked our behinds off, and we received no compensation at all. Yeah. Our reward was to be whipped and flogged and have our family separated away from us, to be sold off to another master, and et cetera. So when I hear some of these folks tell me that black Americans are lazy and trifling or too stupid and too dumb, you know, Don, you and I know, and you just said you had gotten through doing, you're now in African-American history, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we helped. We were the artisans. We helped build this nation. We built the infrastructure. We knew how to put together a bridge, if you will. We knew how to build on a straight line. You know, we knew how to take a piece of string and move it from one peg to the other as a part of surveying and et cetera. And so, you know, I just think we just have to, you know, kind of be a little bit more aggressive as black folk, particularly in this state, because and you know, I'm kind of on the diocese, if you will, really don't care, don't apologize, but I mean, when you take a look at what's going on here in the state of Minnesota, where we are the modern version of the Mississippi of the North, we can't get jobs, we can't get contracts, you know, we can't get decent housing, we sure in the hell can't get decent education. And then I think, you know, we have to take seriously, as I know we are, these kinds of calls.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%, Mr. Edwards. What you were saying about, you know, I was just doing this, like I said, the Black History course, African American History, and it's amazing. You know, this country was built on the backs of black folks. With no rewards from the capital in D.C. to down south to all the way to California. And yet, you know, like you said, we need to be way more aggressive without some of our new non-Negroes coming up to us and telling us that we have bad behavior.
Yes, right. On that note, by the way, what's the update from the Minneapolis Foundation, man? Because I know that their website said something, I'm told, about staff changes, but, I mean, is there some kind of a rupture down there? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, there is a rupture on, what day was that here? On January 23rd on the Minneapolis Foundation's website, excuse me, there was an official statement that stated Ms. Karen Kelly Aula, her vice president of community philanthropy, is leaving the Minneapolis Foundation effective March 30th. This is after 18 years of service. Karen is eager to spend more time with her family. Karen intends to remain active in the Twin Cities communities and looks forward to finding future opportunities for continued engagement in community leadership.
That was, she doesn't have a job to go to.
Exactly. So, you know, and this is another thing that I'm glad you drew attention to that, Mr. Edwards. In our community, when something happens like this with Miss Karen at the Minneapolis Foundation, you know, they put it out that she's going to spend with her family, but, you know, someone else of another color might have got fired. You can be damn sure that they got a job somewhere else, and they'll be announcing that in that particular statement.
Mm-hmm. you're absolutely right. Given the tight economic conditions in this country right now, 18 and a half years has to be clearly at a medium six figures, in other words, 160,000, 180,000 a year, if not a little bit more. You just don't walk away from that and have no place to go. And when I was made aware of the statement announcing the departure, in fact, there's a word in there because I cut you off before you completed it that is very puzzling, and that is effective March 31st. Is that correct?
Well, that is correct.
Yeah, that's a term that is not used in quote-unquote corporate America as it pertains to a mutually agreed-to departure, quote-unquote. When you start talking about effective, if you mean, that means there's no alternative, you're gone. And so I'm puzzled. And I'm really puzzled by those that, you know, certainly took full advantage of her position of leadership at the Minneapolis Foundation, who have been extremely silent, unless I'm mistaken. You know, I'm not maybe cognizant to their Facebooks, web pages, and et cetera, but there's been a certain silence, particularly from the Tornado Relief Committee. You think they'll maybe at their next meeting, if they meet in February, you think they'll at least say something about the departure of a dear friend?
Well, I don't know. You know, I wrote the story, Mr. Edwards, North Minneapolis Tornado Recovery and Bringing Bullies to Playground has its casualties. And I'm looking here at the bottom of the story in the comments, and there's a comment here from Mr. Lewis King of Summit Academy, OIC. It says, "Here comes Bad Don. Run, run, run." Posted on Wednesday at 10:38 p.m.
I'm sorry. Is Lewis now doing stand-up comic? Because I've noticed some of that before. Has he found an alternative position of job responsibility? Sounds like a comedian to me.
Yeah, he might be.
Yeah, we got about 2 minutes left, so you know, I was just kind of wondering, guys. I mean, is there something that represents what should be a dismissal of the fact that a friend, a woman, a professional African American woman who had been a very dear friend to them financially and otherwise, has departed? And I repeat the question. I would expect to hear something of their concern. Or maybe it is that some of them are too close to Sandy Vargas, oops, and don't want to, quote-unquote, offend relationships.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, even down here, Miss Karen was responsible a lot for the collaborative leadership in the role on behalf of the wake of the 35W bridge disaster. You know, she was the head coordinator like she was for the
Tornado Relief, right.
But the thing was with the bridge, you know, you had a whole different crew. This wasn't a part of the black neighborhood. You had business people that were doing business as men, to take it out of the Bible. And here you had men doing business as poverty pimps. And so, I mean, she just got been caught in the crosshairs. And, I mean, we predicted it last year that some, you know, there's going to be casualties. Bruce Bork, Al Flowers, Lisa Jones, Karen,
Yes. Okay, Don, well, wrapping it, and we'll be talking about on our Sunday television program, Black Focus, tomorrow at 5, we'll be talking about this departure and our concern that we, once again, whatever, you know, observations or maybe even differences we may add, the fact of the matter is for 18 and a half years, this African-American woman gave up her life and certainly served well the interest of the community at times, and I'm just puzzled by what happened, and so I kind of go back and take a look at some of the things that I heard in the meetings that I was present in. When some interesting discussions began to take place, which now seem to have backfired, which then led to the ending of a career. So, anyways, that'll be a part of what we'll be talking about, man, tomorrow on Black Focus at 5. You know, what you got, Don?
Well, that's it. We're out of time. Thanks for listening to On Point. We'll be back next week at 4 p.m.
All right. Take care.
Put your bad stuff. Bad night.